Welcome to The Cauldron, a podcast hosted by Ed Bolden Greer, the creator of Ravensvale. In each episode, Ed will have free-flowing conversations about horror, life, culture, and personal growth. Expect to hear from storytellers, authors, horror experts, life gurus, thought leaders, and influencers. The Cauldron is a place where concoctions of a lot of ideas are brewed down to potions that are sometimes important and useful, sometimes eccentric and bizarre, but always just what you need. The Cauldron podcast may contain explicit language and thematic elements not suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Well, hey there, family. Welcome back to another episode of the Ravensvale Cauldron. I'm your host, Ed Bolden Greer, and this is my co-host, Jacob Gardner, a.k.a. Freddy Cat.
Hello, hello, everyone.
Well, Jacob, how are you doing?
I am doing fantastic, Ed. How have you been?
I'm doing great. How was your Easter?
It was incredible, like it always is. I got second place in the family egg hunt this year.
Ah.
Yeah. Got some nice socks. I showed them off to you,
yesterday. You did? Yeah, they were really nice Easter socks.
Oh, man. It was really good. Did you have a good Easter?
I did. We had some family in from South Carolina and had their local family over, and we just had a big dinner and just enjoyed everybody's company.
Nice, nice.
Speaking of Easter, did you see that old Donnie boy got his diapers in a wad because Easter fell on the same day as International Trans Visibility Day?
You mean, oh, Joe purposely picked International Trans Visibility Day to fall on Easter, actually?
I mean, if we listen to Donnie's accusations, yes.
Just as a note, International Trans Visibility Day is always on March 31st. Easter is a transitory holiday that occurs the first Sunday after the full moon on or after the spring equinox.
Hey, I like how you called it a transitory holiday.
I just want to make sure everybody understands, nobody picks when Trans Visibility Day is.
That's true.
And thank God, if everybody wants to know, we won't have to deal with this type of bigotry, at least until March 31st in 2029.
Well, I mean, at least about Easter. Yeah. Wonder what they're going to do next year during 420.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Cheech and Chong and Snoop Dogg moved 420 on Easter next year, I guess. That'll be the headline.
If we're lucky, folks, we'll realize that people are people regardless, and that we're all basically the same beautiful meat sacks floating on a mystic dirt ball.
Ooh, speaking of floating on a mystic dirt ball, are you excited about the next couple of episodes we're doing like I am?
I am. I'm excited just to see your face.
Oh, my God. When you told me we were going to pick this topic, I've been floating.
Well, family, join us next week as we begin a multi-part series called Cosmic Queries. In the next few episodes, we'll delve into the mysteries of alien life and extraterrestrial phenomenon. From the Roswell incident to the latest discoveries by space telescopes, we'll explore the evidence and theories that have captivated scientists and enthusiasts alike. As you know, Jacob has a minor case of exophilia and is obsessed with everything extraterrestrial. Especially the probing. So join us next week and prepare your minds for a voyage into the cosmos where the possibilities are as limitless as the stars. Jacob, are you ready for your would you rather question?
Of course. Let's do it.
Would you rather live in a world where everyone can read your mind or in a world where everyone can see your dreams while you sleep?
Oh, I think either of those options are going to get me committed to a mental institution, probably.
You know, good thought. I think that absolutely you would be committed.
I think it's weird because
I'm really glad. I'm going to interrupt you. Really glad that I can't see all of your thoughts. I mean, you're pretty expressive facially, and so I can often see what you're thinking. But,
I don't know, man. I think I would pick the dream thing. But it's going to be weird because I don't have dreams, really. If I do end up having a dream, it's almost exclusively a nightmare. I was actually talking to my partner about this when I woke up this morning because he asked, like, hey, how'd you sleep? And I said, I had a weird-ass nightmare. And he was like, yeah, what's going on? I was like, I had a nightmare.
This is
going
to be good.
That I had paid for one of those alpha male boot camp things. Have you seen those?
Uh-huh.
It's like losers that wanted to act like they were a Navy SEAL or something like that, and they just pay some dude to, like,
torture them
in a Walmart parking lot, like, dump water on them. And in the dream, I got mad and started to fight the lead alpha of the group, I guess.
Was this an alpha dominance fight?
I think so, but in the dream, I ended up getting arrested, and then Zach bailed me out, but then he got in a fist fight with the guy, too, and then I had to go back and it was a weird...
So you all just kept bailing each other out?
Yeah, it was... I woke up after the second bailout, but either way, those are like the dreams that I have.
Okay, so you don't think those nightmares are you acting out your frustration over maybe like...
Don't say height. Don't you say
over losing an inch of height in a split second and having to go to the gym and fess up to that.
Listen, we could turn the stream into a reality. You keep bringing up my height.
Let's bring it on.
Well, here, I got a would you rather, all
okay.
right?
Okay.
Here's yours. Would you rather have the ability to instantly learn any new skill or have unlimited financial wealth?
That's a really good question, Jacob.
As a caveat, any skill you learn, you can't make money off of it.
It's just a skill you acquire. That's not fair. I mean, that's not going to change my opinion, but thinking about that, here's the scenario with that.
Okay.
So I learn a new skill, right? That doesn't necessarily mean I can teach that skill to people. So if I'm going to make money off of it, I'm going to have to do the work.
That's a good point.
I'm going to have to keep doing the work.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter if you add that caveat into it. I'm still going to choose unlimited because you said unlimited.
Yeah, that's
right?
The word I use.
I'm going to choose unlimited financial wealth because I can continue to help people and do all of the things that I want to do and never have, I'll never run out of money.
It's pretty, remember me. Remember me when you. You do this.
I'll make sure you're taken care of.
Okay, thanks, bro.
I won't have any new skills, but.
On Sunday, March 31st, the world celebrated International Transgender Day of Visibility. The Ravensville Podcast Network and Small Raven Media continue to celebrate the courage, resilience, and invaluable contributions of transgender individuals worldwide. We know that we must come together to honor their unique experiences and amplify their voices. Our parent company, TBG, is committed to advancing the health, safety, peace, and prosperity of all people. We recognize the importance of centering and uplifting the LGBTQIA+ community. Our strategic goal is to create an environment where everyone feels safe, respected, and included, regardless of their sexual orientation, gender identity, or expression.
Together, we celebrate diversity and work towards a more compassionate and equitable future. Transgender and non-binary people exist in every corner of society. They are our neighbors, our friends, our colleagues, and our family members. By recognizing their visibility, we affirm their humanity and dignity. Visibility is not just about being seen. It's about validating their existence and affirming their right to live authentically. Transgender individuals face unique struggles, from navigating discriminatory laws to combating stigma and violence. Yet they continue to thrive, contribute, and inspire.
We must advocate for inclusivity by supporting policies that protect transgender rights in education, healthcare, employment, and housing. Let's create a world where everyone can live openly and authentically.
We must educate and empathize with the transgender community by learning about the transgender experience. Listen to their stories, challenge public misconceptions, and foster empathy to understand and dismantle prejudice.
We must amplify their voices by sharing their achievements, struggles, and stories. Use your platform to uplift transgender voices and advocate for change.
We must combat discrimination by standing up against discriminatory laws and practices. Transgender individuals deserve equal rights, respect, and safety. Together, we thrive.
So let's build a world where transgender individuals can live authentically, free from fear and prejudice. And remember, visibility saves lives.
By aligning our policies, practices, and programs with these strategic goals, we contribute to a world where trans individuals can thrive, free from discrimination and prejudice. Today and every day, let's celebrate their visibility and honor their resilience.
During this episode, as we delve into the Dr. Jekyll movie review, we'll be cautious not to reveal any spoilers. However, we acknowledge that many viewers are already familiar with the fundamental story of the book. Our aim remains to provide an engaging discussion without compromising the surprise elements for those experiencing it for the very first time.
In the bustling streets of London, we meet Gabriel John Utterson, a respected legal practitioner. Utterson becomes embroiled in a series of mysterious events involving an old friend, Dr. Henry Jekyll, and a sinister figure named Edward Hyde. Dr. Jekyll, a brilliant scientist, is driven by curiosity and a desire to explore the darker aspects of human nature. He concocts a potion that has the power to split his personality into two distinct beings, the good and respectable Jekyll and the malevolent and unpredictable Hyde. As Jekyll continues his experiments, Hyde emerges, a creature devoid of conscience, fueled by base instinct. Hyde commits crimes, causes havoc, and leaves a trail of fear and confusion in his wake. Utterson, perplexed by Jekyll's strange behaviors, investigates the connection between the two men. The novella delves into themes of duality, morality, and the consequences of scientific meddling. Ultimately, the story leads to a chilling revelation. Jekyll and Hyde are one and the same. Jekyll's confession reveals the inner struggle between his virtuous self and his darker alter ego. In a desperate attempt to regain control, Jekyll takes his own life, leaving behind a cautionary tale of the dangers of tampering with the boundaries of human nature. The case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde remains a timeless classic. It explores the complexity of the human psyche and the eternal battle between good and evil. Its impact on popular culture endures, with the phrase Jekyll and Hyde symbolizing the dual nature within us all. So, Jacob, this week's homework was a little different. We watched the advance viewing of the movie Dr. Jekyll a week ago, and we were supposed to formulate our thoughts for a review today. Did you do your homework?
Yeah, actually, I did. And, you know, this was the easiest amount of homework we've had to do for the show.
I agree.
You had pizza and beer waiting for me. That was
we had to watch
homework.
A movie.
Yeah, I know,
and,
right?
And then we had to think.
I mean, it was so hard. It was probably the most taxing research we've ever had to do, probably.
Yeah. What was your favorite part of the movie?
So I actually had, like, two aspects of the movie that I really, really liked. It's always exciting to watch a movie that makes you think.
Right.
This is not a classic horror movie where, you know, Nina, the character Eddie Izzard portrays, doesn't just transform into a beast,
right,
you know, and starts chasing Rob, the main character, around. It was more unsettling than anything as you progressed through the movie and you start noticing these little nuances and small changes in the character. I mean, it can't be overstated. Eddie Izzard's acting in this movie was good.
Phenomenal.
So good. There was one line in particular that I really, really liked where they're getting ready to play chess. So they have a glass of scotch or brandy, one of the two. And
I think it was scotch.
Scotch. And then Nina says, oh, yes, I enjoy a good drink. It's just a habit from walking around in a man's world.
I think that's going to become an iconic statement. It's not in the original Jekyll Hyde.
No.
And I think it had so many different layers with it.
Oh, man.
Like, from the actor standpoint, you know, I think that that's just an amazing statement. But then if you watch the movie, you're going to see how Nina had to function in the pharmaceutical industry in a man's world, you know, quite successfully.
Yeah, very successfully.
I think my favorite part was the staircase scene where Nina is coming out of the office.
Yeah.
And Rob has been coming up the stairs looking for Nina, and he's kind of hidden against the stairs. And what we don't realize at that time is that Rachel actually came out of the office, and Rachel sniffs the air like smells something, which is implied it's Rob. But starts to walk up the stairs and takes about three stairs and is right above Rob. And there's a stumble. And then you see this transformation. When Rachel came out of the office, you kind of knew it was Rachel.
Yeah.
And then as they're going up the stairs, you see this transformation into Nina.
Mm-hmm.
And Nina's clueless and just continues to walk up the stairs. And I just thought that that was such a powerful scene, contrasting the two characters that Izzard was playing.
Mm-hmm.
And I also thought, and you said this just a little while ago, you also see Rob through the banisters of the stairs.
Yeah.
And it looks like a jail cell.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and he is ultimately a prisoner in that house.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my favorite scene. So go ahead, give us the rest of your thoughts on this, and I'll just summarize it at the end.
I think from start to finish, the director did a fantastic job of balancing the juxtaposition, that duality and everything.
Absolutely.
At the beginning of the movie, there's this back and forth of the music being really soft and then really loud. And Joe Stevenson, the director, outside of both the audio, there were a lot of shots that would be really up close and personal, zoomed in, really looking at the facial expressions, and then these huge wide shots to kind of balance it out. There was always this weird feeling where there was a seriousness. It was either all the way in or all the way out. They were either Jekyll or Hyde. And
right.
I loved the suspense because in the beginning of the movie, and it wasn't until probably about halfway through, that I was questioning who is really the monster here. There was a lot of unknown about Rob's character, the main protagonist in the film.
Well, that was emerging through the whole thing, yeah.
Exactly. You know, without giving away too much, you know, he was sent to prison for a long time, but we never really understood what it was for. And Rob's character in the movie is portrayed as this kind of like meek, kind of demure individual, but he did something we assume was pretty serious to get locked in prison for 12 years. So I loved how it wasn't until it became really in your face about who we need to be paying attention to did we know who the real monster was. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The pacing I thought was fantastic. It felt really efficient with the way that they were doing it, but it didn't feel rushed either. You know, again, had me questioning. It wasn't like at the very beginning of the movie, even though I knew Nina's character was named, you know, Hyde and Jekyll and whatnot, yeah, like that. I loved how the director baked it in really organically, the progression of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. There wasn't like a stereotypical scene where somebody takes some potion and then transforms. You see the transformation take place almost completely mentally and emotionally. And those close-up shots that occurred in the film really allows you to kind of see the nuanced subtleness and the changes of expression and even the eyes of Eddie Izzard's character, almost as like a little bit of a clue, like, oh, we're not looking at Rachel anymore. We're looking at Nina.
Right. There was a visual change.
Yeah.
And not through makeup or anything like that. It was purely through the actor's talent.
Yes. Yes. I mean, it was on full display for this movie. It's definitely one of those movies that if you are watching it closely, you'll notice little breadcrumbs of what's about to happen. But in the moment, you know, there's so much back and forth. The dialogue I thought was fantastic. I love the dialogue that was in the movie too. I feel like it's one of those movies, kind of like Tenet, if you go back and watch, yeah, Tenet, you're like, oh, okay, I know what that was supposed to mean. I know what they were setting up to right here.
I don't have any complaints about this movie. Well, maybe one small one. I think the only negative thing I can pull out of the whole thing, because I like to balance, you know, to, you know, if there's something. The only negative thing I can pull out is the ravens or the crows cawing in the background.
Yeah.
And there just didn't seem to be a purpose in it. It never emerged what that was.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that too. And you said something about that. After we finished the movie, we all kind of sat around in here, you, me, and a couple of our staff members we have that are in charge of writing the reviews and everything. And that was something that we all kind of like scratched our heads at mm-hmm. collectively. Like, what was the purpose of those corvids exactly? Yeah.
Like, it was an odd sound effect, if that's what it was. I also think it could have been something that had to be cut for the timing of the movie. So I don't know.
And I guess if I have to offer up some criticism, I definitely felt like that movie could have been stretched into 2 hours very easily.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I'm a little biased because I just love Eddie Izzard so much. I just want to see
yep.
more of them, you know?
Well, one of the things that I noted in the European reviews was some people said that it was that it dragged a little bit. I didn't see.
What?
I mean, if you're going to say dragged as in Eddie being a drag queen, but the movie didn't drag at all. Like, it wasn't slow to start. And it was an 89-minute movie that kind of kept me on edge and captivated the whole time.
No, yeah, and I completely agree with your assessment. I don't think it drug at all. In fact, we talked about that review,
mm-hmm.
so we could all be like, well, is it? And I don't think anybody that watched it with us that night went, no.
No, we all came away wanting more.
And I think it was, again, to go back to the juxtaposition of, you know, far away, up close, really quiet, really loud, the movie, it felt like if you could use that criticism of it dragging, they were building a lot of dialogue and a lot of storytelling. And then it was like, boom, immediately into an intense.
Yeah, there were no unnecessary scenes.
No.
And no unnecessary dialogue. There might have been some unnecessary crow cawing.
I love the ending. We're not going to spoil it.
Yeah, no spoilers.
The ending was fantastic.
Not what you're going to expect.
Really big twist, which is yep. what I thought was cool. And another really cool aspect of that movie was Eddie Izzard's character really played this kind of puppet master. Mm-hmm. You could tell that the main protagonist was playing by the rules that Nina was setting, right? And even though on the surface there were these scenes where Nina was giving Rob a free pass. You know, Nina's assistant was really jumping down Rob's back about, you know, sleeping
very
in.
Very authoritarian top.
And then character. The moment it push really came to shove, Nina would be like, it's okay, Rob. It's all right. And you kind of saw this weird sort of coddling to really draw Rob in and really lower his defenses more than anything. And I thought it made it even more intense when it switched from Rachel into Nina, yeah. and it made a way more intense interaction for the dialogue for the two characters when you see this kind of like almost bipolar shift in the demeanor of Eddie Izzard's character. And it set a really good groundwork, I think, after that scene where you had to question which version are we going to get? You know, they would show a pan over of Eddie Izzard's character sitting in the study, for example. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I saw that scene, I thought to myself, is this going to be a dark brooding, I'm so pissed at you, I can't believe this? Or no, it went into this really soft.
Sweet.
Yeah. But even in the back of your mind, it was like, this is just like that little light on the end of that fish that's going to trap you, mm-hmm. like an angel fish or whatever yep. it's called. That chess
An
scene
angler
was really,
fish.
Angler fish, angel fish. That scene with the chess was, it's so sick because of what happens when Nina sends Rob out to get some more alcohol. I'm not going to spoil it, but
he didn't say chess. He said chess. They were playing a game of chess.
They were playing a game of chess. You know? No, chess. And you realize again, it shows that duality that Eddie Izzard's character is portraying where, oh, we're just playing a friendly little game. We're enjoying a drink, but knowing that he's an addict, that also was a really...
Yeah. Also, I think that unlike if you've read the book or seen anything about Dr. Jekyll, I think that this keeps you guessing through the whole time. There's so many nuances and there's so many twists and turns that happen in this movie that you don't really know what's going to happen in the end. And trust me, it's not what you think.
No, it's really not. And I think one thing that Joe Stevenson, the director, did extremely well was because I didn't trust the characters that I was looking at. As a moviegoer, when you originally go watch a movie, you kind of take the characters at face value.
Mm-hmm.
Stevenson was kind of making me have a split personality. where I was a person wanting to enjoy the film, believe what I'm seeing, but in the back of my mind, I start having these negative thoughts, like, what is this person setting up? What is going on here? You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. There were moments in the movie where Rob was, like, my favorite character, and I was, like, on Team Rob.
Yeah.
And then other times I was like, he's a fucking douchebag.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And it was a roller coaster.
It really was. And I think I would definitely be down to watch it again once it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
When it gets released in theaters, I want to go watch it again.
It's not going to be released in theaters, though, in the United States. It was released in theaters in the UK and in Russia. But when it comes to the States, it's only going to be released to streaming.
But you
could come to our house.
Exactly, yeah. You guys got a big-ass TV anyways. I think it would be fun to rewatch it again. Hey, we can do it for our Halloween.
Halloween?
Yeah,
that's
Halloween
what I was
movie, fest.
For the movie fest. Yeah.
And then kind of, I think it would be fun to take, you know, some people that haven't watched it before
and have
them try to like guess and see what's kind of going on. Cause we already know, but again, I think there's going to be a lot of really small details as we rewatch it that really starts, oh, okay, that makes sense. The Kafka reference was pretty fun too.
Yeah. So the one thing that I will point out that you pointed out, since we're doing a review, this movie is set to release in the U.S. in October, just in time for Halloween.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
I think one scene of the movie that really was kind of the flashpoint where I couldn't trust which version of Eddie Izzard's character we were seeing on screen followed a scene where Rachel was gifting Rob various things. Again, doing this sweet caregiver role, acting like a kindly old lady. The very next scene, when they're having breakfast, you can tell it's Nina. Cold, curt. Very kind of whatever. And in a desperate attempt to make up for it in a way, Rob decides to break the rules that were set by the assistant and purchase her a gift.
A gift, yeah.
Which we're not going to spoil, but it's really interesting how you see that gift completely backfire for Rob.
I'm going to point out, I don't think that Izzard or Rachel or Nina would appreciate the old woman reference.
Oh, God. Yeah, I know, right?
So if you're listening, he apologizes intently.
Please. I never want to piss off Eddie Izzard.
And Eddie Izzard, we'll have you on our podcast anytime you want to be on our podcast.
Please. Your Monkey with a Gun stand-up bit's still one of the funniest
Hilarious.
Ones. Cake or Death. Oh, man. So good. And that was one thing that I think is important to bring up, too, is that not only was Eddie Izzard able to masterfully create a overwhelming sense of suspense and wonder with his acting, he still had that classic comedic twist. There were some moments in the movie that were funny.
Yeah.
That were really, really funny. I also just loved the way that Eddie Izzard, his vocabulary that he used. I get that the dialogue is scripted and whatnot, but you can tell it had a touch.
Yeah.
Pretty heavy influence.
I think there was some actor influence on the actual scripting.
Yeah.
Of the movie.
The portrayal of Rachel as this weak character, right, really masks how dangerous of a person that they actually were.
Well, and that goes for Nina as well.
Yeah.
The introductory scenes, everyone's treating Nina like an egg.
Yeah. Yeah. Real coddling. Yeah. And when you see these flashes of intense energy from Nina, you're reminded, oh, this is all a charade.
Yeah, this character had to be such a challenge.
Oh, man.
Just that character alone. And then pile on to that. Yes, we're Eddie Izzard fans. But pile on to the Nina character, which would be hard to do.
Yes.
Just that character alone. And then have to do the Rachel character on top of it and switch in a moment's notice. Wow.
No, yeah. And do it in a real subtle way, too. It wasn't like, you know, the character
drastic.
Didn't like turn off to the side and start like making a growling noise, you know?
I love your little monster sound.
Yeah, keep that in. It was literally just sometimes an inflection on the eyebrows.
Yeah.
Or even there was a really nice close-up shot where it's just of the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something different about the eyes.
Yeah.
That makes you realize this is not who we saw literally 5 seconds prior. You know?
And there, I know cameras can do a lot of tricks, but I don't think there's any way they could have filmed them separately. Mm-hmm. Like, today we're going to film the Nina scenes, and tomorrow we'll film the Rachel scenes. I just don't think that was possible. So I think because of what I know about films, I think that they probably, it was a low-budget film. It was not high-budget. I'm going to assume, and I think we talked about this, they probably rented the manor house for a month that it's filmed in and did all the scenes simultaneously in the different rooms that they were setting up because it wasn't done on set.
Yeah.
It was all on location.
Well, I mean, and let's just, since you brought it up, the setting was fantastic.
Absolutely.
I loved how there were some really good use of imagery without being too on the nose with it in the manor, which I thought was cool. One thing I would be remiss if I didn't bring it up, I think as a really good homage to the original Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde is in this portrayal, similar to the original one, we know that Dr. Jekyll is making a monster out of himself, right? But I think where the really cool twist on this modern adaptation of it is how in this movie, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde's making monsters of the people around them. That's not going to spoil anything, but...
Well, and there's a throwback to Dr. Jekyll in this.
Mm-hmm.
So I really, really appreciated all of the... I won't call them Easter eggs because they were obvious if you were watching for them.
Yeah. And we're too close to Easter for an Easter egg reference, right?
Yeah. It was 2 days ago.
I think everybody that watches this movie will be very satisfied with the ending. I think that it didn't end in the way that you see coming, even though on the surface you may think it's a pretty obvious conclusion. Joe Stevenson does just a wonderful way of twisting what you expected completely onto its head.
I agree. My task for this podcast outside of kind of co-hosting it was to write the summary of what we all thought.
Okay, yeah,
and believed about the movie. And so I'm going to do that. But I want to just tell everybody our wonderful movie reviewer has been a part of this as well. And her movie review over at theravensvale.com under blog, you can go and read her review. And she does such a wonderful job at bringing out highlights and things that other people probably don't see. She's just absolutely wonderful. She is my sister-in-law, but she is an exceptional author. So here we go. In this masterful twist on the Jekyll and Hyde story, director Joe Stevenson takes us on a haunting journey through the mind of the enigmatic Dr. Nina Jekyll. Eddie Izzard's performance in the title role is nothing short of captivating, leaving us yearning for more. The film skillfully blends elements of a psychological thriller and gothic horror, all while playing homage to the source material. As we follow Rob Stevenson, played by Scott Chambers, an ex-convict turned caregiver for Nina Jekyll, we are drawn into the web of mystery and intrigue. The gloomy countryside mansion becomes the backdrop for a battle between good and evil, with Nina's alter ego, Rachel Hyde, at the center of it all. Stevenson's direction offers superb, spooky imagery, creating an eerie atmosphere that keeps us on the edge of our seats. But it's Eddie Izzard who truly shines. Their portrayal of both the compassionate Dr. Jekyll and the malevolent Rachel Hyde is a masterclass in duality. We witnessed her internal struggle as she grappled with her split personality, and it's impossible to look away. Without the use of special effects, you can see Izzard's transformation from Jekyll to Hyde. The film's departure from the original novella is refreshing, breathing new life into an age-old tale. It doesn't shy away from exploring the complexities of identity, morality, and the human psyche. And while some may argue that it strays too far from the source material, we here at Ravensvale believe it's precisely these departures that make Dr. Jekyll a standout. In our opinion, Dr. Jekyll deserves to be remembered along the best horror films that Hammer Studio has ever released. Eddie Izzard's performance alone is reason enough to watch this phenomenal retelling. Here's hoping we see more of them in similar roles. Izzard is a force to be reckoned with.
Well, family, that's it for this episode of the Ravensvale Cauldron. We hope you found it stimulating and fascinating. We found ourselves immersed in the enigmatic world of duality. Eddie Izzard's portrayal of the brilliant yet tormented Dr. Jekyll has left an indelible mark on cinematic history. But what lies at the heart of this chilling tale? Is it a cautionary warning about the dangers of unchecked ambition, or perhaps a reflection on the fragility of our own moral compasses? Eddie Izzard's nuanced performance invites us to ponder the shadows that dwell within us all, the hidden facets we dare not confront. Remember, the mirror reflects not only our visage, but also the depths of our souls. Until the next episode, stay curious, stay introspective, and embrace the complexity that makes us human. I'm Jacob Garner.
And I'm Ed Bolden Greer.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you like what you've heard, make sure you join us next week as we explore a topic that I am unbelievably excited for.
How excited are you?
Unbelievably excited for. And we're going to go over the mysteries of alien life and extraterrestrial phenomena.
Now, family, you adults have a few chores to do. Go on over to ravensvale.com and see about doing your chores on social media. Follow us on all the social media platforms that we've made available just for you folks. Like, listen, subscribe, and follow wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you don't mind, leave us a great rating and a kind comment. You can find the Ravensvale Cauldron podcast on your favorite podcast platform. If you haven't already, just search for the Ravensvale Cauldron podcast. And again, make sure you hit that follow button to stay up to date with all the latest episodes. Oh, and tell your friends about us, won't you? So until next time, family,
see you soon.
The Ravensvale Cauldron is a production of Small Raven Media. Today's episode was hosted by Ed Bolden Greer with co-host Jacob A. Garner. Audio engineering and sound design by Nick Devan at Nikki D Sound. Copyrighted 2024, Small Raven Media. All rights reserved.